Guys, we're trying something a little fun and new. We had such a good time during our VR episode interacting with our listeners and getting their best definitely dying stories that we want to ask you guys to share any stories you have with us. So if you have any stories about either thinking you were sick and being wildly wrong, or actually getting sick, or a wild injury story. Basically, if you have any stories you would tell at a party, if it was a party full of people who didn't mind a downer story, give us a call at our Definitely Dying hotline. The number is 323-388-3879. I'll repeat it. And that's 323-388-3879. And you can leave your story on a little Google Voice answering machine. Yeah. And maybe we'll feature it on the show.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be fun?
Wouldn't that be fun? Hello, I'm Madeline Walter.
And I'm Ben Axelrad. And we're both hypochondriacs.
I think I'm sick when I'm not.
And anytime I'm sick, I think I'm a goner for sure.
Welcome to Definitely Dying, the podcast about health concerns, both real and imagined.
Because it's better to laugh about it together than cry about it alone.
I have a runny nose and an ingrown hair. And
my knee hurts.
My armpit kind of hurts. Is that a rash? And I had Asian food and that makes me feel kind of sick. I might be lactose intolerant. I got a thing on the side of my ear.
I haven't cried in 3 years.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Definitely Dying. Hello again to our guest host, Ben Green. Joining us for the second week in a row, because as any of you faithful listeners know, we record two of these at a time every other week. So Ben Axelrad has not been sick for 2 weeks. He's simply been sick for the 4 hours that we've recorded these episodes. So we have our guest host, Ben Green, with us.
It's an honor to be here, but I'm sorry to everybody who's disappointed to be getting the worst Ben.
No, you have to stop saying you're the worst Ben.
It's been scientifically proven.
How?
Ben's stronger than me. He's taller than me. He's generally funnier than me.
No.
I'd say one day a week I'm funnier than him, but the other 6 days he's funnier than me.
Well, you know what you have on him now?
What?
You're healthier than him because he's sick. So, one point for this, Ben. I'm glad that we're here and not in our house because we have a very scary fly infestation in our house.
Oh, yeah. I hope the only updates about that later on are that it's gotten better.
It's so creepy. I don't know where they came from. They're these, like, black, like, these big, they're like those fat, slow flies. Like, and I don't. They're all gathered in one of our windows, and more and more of them are arriving, and I don't know where they're coming from.
So I think we got to spray those windows with some fly off.
Yeah, something. Well, I was out. I was out of the studio a few weeks ago because I was in Ohio, and I was there because my grandma passed away, so I thought that would be kind of interesting to talk about since this is, after all, a podcast about death.
You've been pretty sad about it, obviously.
Yeah.
I have too.
Yeah.
She was an amazing woman.
She was the best. You know, so she, again, if any of you, like, have been listening for a while, you may remember when my grandfather died, which was pretty much a year ago. And so this was his wife. They'd been married for 71 years and just had this, like, just dope marriage where they were, like, just so – they were, like, just such a cool couple until, like, just through their being in their 90s. We made a slideshow for the funeral, and it was just this, like – it's so fun looking at those old photos because, like, there's just, like, just photos of them looking like such babes. I mean, they were really, I think, objectively super attractive. Am I saying that just because they're my grandparents?
No. Your family puts my whole family to shame. No offense to my family, but I've always thought your family had sort of a Kennedys-esque vibe to them. And your grandparents were so attractive.
I just found, like, this.
Your grandma was really beautiful in all the pictures you've shown of her in those years.
I found this like really hot photo of them on the beach, like, and like she's like wearing this like cool bikini, and my we were all sorting them like through them together, and my Aunt Pat picked it up and she looked at the date and she was like, that's 6 months after Grandma gave birth to me. Like, how did she look that good 6 months after having her second child?
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's nuts. And so it was a really interesting, I mean, aside from, so my grandma was 93 and it was, you know, sort of one of those situations where you feel like you have to attach a disclaimer of like, she had this like long, wonderful life. Like, so I feel like I have to keep telling people like, don't feel sad for me. You know, it's like sort of like one of those situations where, you know, it would have to have happened at some point. But it was interesting because she was in the hospital and then went into hospice. And so I went into town when she entered hospice because everybody assumed that it was, you know, going to be pretty quickly before she passed away. And then what happened instead was she was in hospice for probably like 6 days and five nights. And so she was surrounded by family. I mean, it was like just so nuts to see all of the people who like made such an effort to come and just see her and talk to her for the last time. Like, she had like people who worked at her retirement facility, who like a woman who had just left because like she was like treated and paid really badly, but she liked my grandma so much. They were just genuine buds that she came just to tell my grandma that she had gotten this new job she'd interviewed for, because my grandma was like, you need to tell me, like, like you have to tell me. She was just so like, it was, she was just so genuinely interested in what was going on with everybody. And I have 20 cousins, and now like, and so there are 20 grandchildren, and then pretty much everybody's married. So that's about 40. And then there are 21 great grandchildren. And my grandma straight up knew what was going on with everybody. Like, she understood nuances of my brother's like weird anthropology PhD program that like, our peers don't know, like, because she actually like cared to pay attention and ask the right
and knew
questions.
It at 93.
Yeah,
which is amazing.
It's really amazing. She was just like such a person to be admired. But so the hospice experience was, so she had a bunch of people surrounding her in hospice at all times. But what my dad and I ended up doing was like, we would stay there at night because it felt like one helpful thing you can do at a time when there's really nothing else to do to be helpful, you know. So to let my like aunts go home, because my grandma lives in Cleveland and two of my dad's sisters live in Cleveland, so they've, you know, really have done a lot of the primary caretaking, you know, for the past decades. So my dad and I would hang out at night, and we would have a chance to talk to a lot of the hospice nurses, and who are in general just some of the coolest people you'll meet, like just like people who dedicate their lives just to the comfort of somebody at the end of their life. Is like, it's just some of like the calmest, coolest, most like centered seeming people. Like, you just feel like relaxed and good just being around them.
And you were telling me some of them have like really cool reasons that they got into this in the first place, right?
Yeah. So my dad really liked asking them like why they got into hospice care. He would like to make a lot of jokes first. Like, they would always come in and be like, do you guys need anything? And my dad would always be like, a frappuccino. And we would like chat about that. And then he would ask like why you got into hospice work. And so most of them, a lot of them were like, talked about how they like doing this kind of work because it's so much more, you know, it's like about keeping the person passing comfortable, but it also is just about like sort of ushering the family through an experience that's probably new for them and pretty uncomfortable. And then other people, you know, talked about how like this feels like such a specific way to actually make a difference. But then one nurse, this is maybe four nights in, we had this one nurse who was like just this sort of like, she was like kind of like quick and rough with everything. And like, she didn't have the same kind of like soft sort of Terry Gross voice that everybody else had. And we were like, why'd you get into hospice? And she was like, honestly, I really wanted to be a vet, but I didn't think I could handle putting animals down. And it was like, and then she was like, but then I like took a test in high school that was like, what job should you be? And like, I got healthcare professional, which I thought like, yeah, I guess I like helping people. So well, I don't know. I decided to be a hospice nurse. And I kind of, I hadn't really liked her before that, but then I did like her after that. Because she was really speaking her truth. And then she also was the only person who would use the word die. Because, like, everybody else would, like, be very careful about their language because they don't want to push too many buttons. They'd be like, passed away, passed on, you know. Because basically, this whole hospice experience was my family trying to ask nurses how long my grandma would stay alive and them having to continue to tell us we don't know. Like,
yeah.
There's just no way to know. And we would be like, what? Like, we kept trying to find a way around the unknowable, you know, schedule of, like, when someone's going to pass away. And so a lot of people would be like, well, you know, it could be hours. It could be days. This kind of thing just doesn't have a strict schedule. And this other nurse who used to want to be a vet was like, oh, they didn't tell you when she's going to die? I don't know. I don't think she'll die tonight. Maybe she'll die tomorrow. Yeah, it's really hard to say, but, you know, her feet cold? It was like she just had such a strikingly different bedside manner. And to that nurse, I salute you.
Yeah, I'm glad that you got to meet her.
Yeah. So should we, I don't know, do we need to say more things or do we start the podcast?
I think we start the podcast. But your grandma was an amazing person. I'm glad that I got to spend so much time with her.
Yeah, she was
over
really
the last 12 years.
I mean, yeah, she like I remember Ben Axelrod said something about my grandpa where he was like, you know, not everybody or everybody's definitely dying, but not everybody is definitely living. And my grandpa was someone who was definitely living. And I think, you know, that the same can be said for my grandma. Who
so
was
much.
Just such a special. I mean, she was just really the best, you know, and so now I kind of only I hope that I can like take a little bit of what was special about her and like just kind of live that in my own life.
Yeah, something to aspire to.
Yeah. Well, let's start the podcast. We have a really exciting guest today. This is the first time we've gotten a guest in this manner. This guest called into our hotline to ask to be a guest on the show. And it was really exciting because he has just had a long, really cool career. I mean, he hosted a television show in Canada that you can also watch in the U.S. for 10 years. Two daily shows, EP Daily and Reviews on the Run. He's just an accomplished host, speaker. He has a TED Talk that you can watch. I'll tell you how to listen to it later. It's a called the Fuck It List. And he's just a really cool, lovely guy who we just met a couple minutes ago, and we're excited to get to know more. Guys, Scott Jones.
Oh my God, it is such an honor to be here. I love podcasts. I'm always looking around for new ones, and I'm always looking around specifically for podcasts that really connect with me. And I felt like when I found your podcast, it was like a ship sailed into my harbor, you know? Like this is definitely for me because I've been a hypochondriac my whole life, terrified of dying and always sure that I have something that is seconds away from killing me.
Okay, so I want to get into it pretty much right away, but we have to start with our honorary first question, which since you listen to the podcast, you'll be familiar.
Yes.
On a scale
all
of 1
time.
To 10.
10.
10. This is one of the first, people usually come in at around a 6 because I think
pussies.
It's, seriously. It could be argued 10 is the pussiest if you're thinking about it.
Oh, really?
Well, I guess it depends. Are you scared of it or are you
no,
just
I'm
preoccupied
not scared anymore.
By it?
I don't think I'm scared. After what I went through, and we can talk about that a little bit more later, but I think about death all the time. I think this is the end all the time, and I'm okay going. Like even when I was sick and I was in the hospital, I just felt like I've had a pretty good go.
Yeah.
Like I'm happy with what I've had, and now the surprising thing for me, and again, we'll talk about this more in depth, is that I get more. And so now what am I going to do with the more?
Yeah.
So I think about it all the time, and I'm not afraid of it at all. Like, even on the way out here, I live in Toronto now, flying out here, you know, 4-hour flight. Like, I don't fucking care if this plane goes down.
Yeah.
I'm okay. Like, I've had a great run.
Yeah.
And now the fact that I get any more, just like this moment, tonight, right now, I'm so grateful just for that.
So you were sick in the hospital. Can you tell exactly what you were sick with?
2013, I had night sweats a lot. Mm-hmm. And I went to the doctor. I was sure something was wrong with me. And I started going, in Canada, you have family doctor. And you go, I went to my family doctor. He's like, I don't know.
What is that? Is that just what
just
you call
like
a general practitioner?
Right.
Okay, cool.
So
did it feel, this is a digression, but does it feel sad to go to a family doctor when you don't have a family?
How do you know I don't have a family?
Well, because in your TED Talk, you sound like a single man.
I have two cats, and I have a really lovely girlfriend.
Okay, okay.
Oh, some of the best women in the world are in Canada.
Okay.
Holy crap. If you ever go up there, look at the women.
Keep an eye out for the women. I will do.
You do that.
Yeah.
So I was in the hospital, and I lost my train of thought, which happens sometimes.
Oh, so, and also I love a digression, so it's probably my fault. So you were having night sweats a lot, and you went to the hospital. You went to your family doctor.
I was sweating like a motherfucker every night, and I would get up, and I would literally like change my shirt, and I'd have to change it. Like, and I was just like, these are not normal night sweats. Mm-hmm. And the doctors were just like, I don't know what to do for you. And I started going to the emergency room. What? And so I'd go there. I went to the emergency room 5 times. And I said, there's something wrong with me. And they looked me over and they kept me for hours. And they would just say, listen, we can't find anything wrong with you. What they found was that I had something called endocarditis, which is an infection in your heart. And usually like very unhealthy people like IV drug users get endocarditis. But normal healthy people don't usually get it. So they did not think to look for it. And so as a result, it went undiagnosed. For probably a year, maybe longer.
So
I just sat there and it grew and it grew and it grew in my heart, in the mitral valve, and eventually pieces of it started breaking off and traveled in my bloodstream like the minecart sequence in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. And they went to my brain and I had a stroke or series of strokes.
Because a piece of infection basically was carted up to your brain.
I actually saw an MRI of my brain from that time. And it looked like rain falling on a big dark lake.
Does that mean?
Just all the damage that was all scattered. Now, I mostly am healthy. Like you can't see what's wrong with me.
Yeah.
You'll slowly deduce what's wrong with me over the course of the show. but I lose my train of thought sometimes. Mm. I get tired really easily.
Yeah.
I repeat myself, less so now.
Huh.
But I'm like a work in progress. The brain heals. That's the thing that I love about the brain. It's miraculous.
Yeah.
They call it neuroplasticity. The brain finds a way to work around the parts that are damaged.
Yeah.
But my brain is still figuring itself out. So every time I do something, like when I did the TED Talk, like when I'm here, like I push myself and I take my brain, I push it a little further, I push it a little harder. And then I get something on the far side of it. I heal a little bit more.
What was it? Okay, well, first of all, tell us about this. So you had a series of mini strokes.
Yes.
And then did they culminate in one big event? Or like what was there like sort of a climax of the strokes?
No, there was I started losing my grip on reality. Like I stopped going to work. I just laid
Which is crazy if you host a TV show.
That's right. And so they were like, where's Scott? And they had to come and they had to get like the super in my building to open the door to my apartment. And they just found me sleeping on the couch. And I stopped feeding my cats, my beloved cats.
Yeah.
I have two cats.
What are their names?
Well, there's a big boy and his name is Chief because he's very insecure.
Oh.
And I have a little tiny, tiny girl. She's literally the size. She's like a black and white, like a tuxedo.
Oh.
And she's so tiny, but she lived on the streets of New York, and she had a couple litters of kittens, and her name is Bee, like Bumblebee. So
that's
Chief
really,
and Bee. And
so weren't feeding Chief and Bee.
I wasn't feeding anybody. I wasn't going to work, and I was just fucking falling apart. Like everything, the wheels fell right off my life. And there are some shows where I was still thinking I was well enough to do the show, but I was clearly not all there. Like, it's hard. Like, a lot of the show that we did was improvisational.
Yeah,
it wasn't,
we weren't
reading off of teleprompters. And it's just hard to remember, if we're reviewing a movie. And that's what we reviewed, movies, video games, technology, like nerd shit, like hardcore.
Yeah.
But remembering any details well enough to host a TV show was really a challenge for me.
Yeah. How aware were you that the wheels were kind of falling off? Like, what was going through your mind when you like couldn't remember things and you were like, was it so gradual that you were just like, maybe I'm just really tired or I'm really,
A lot of it seems surreal. A lot of it's like, I mean, we all know what being drunk is like.
Yeah.
Like a lot of it was like that. It was just like, woo, I wasn't unhappy. I didn't feel sick. I knew I was going to sweat at night like I did every night. And I just was like, I remember walking to work in Vancouver and I remember walking home. But I just remember kind of being happy, but also out of it. Like I just wasn't, my brain wasn't, and every day there was less of my brain functioning, like little bits of it were getting more and more damaged. And so,
That's like so scary too, because it's like, I feel like it's the kind of thing like we'll throw around if like sometimes like Ben will leave his keys in the front door, you know, like overnight or whatever. And he'll always be like, I don't know, maybe I had a bunch of little strokes and didn't find it, you know, and it like, we throw that out as a casual explanation for every time we like, forget something. But the fact that that happened to you and that kind of, that like, you know, that it did manifest itself in like a bunch of things that could be forgetful and then they just escalated.
I'm sure the people I work with just thought I was being a selfish asshole. They're like, wow, he just didn't show up for work today. Somebody call him. We got to talk to him.
That's crazy.
But I was just fucking falling apart.
Oh,
and I really, like, they just thankfully found it. It was really because one of the doctors in the emergency room just took a wild guess. They're
so
like,
this is
what
when you
about
came
this?
In for the sweats again? Or?
Yeah, I just went in again. I'm like, I am fucked up. And I went in. And they were like, maybe it's this. And they just decided, they started testing for that. And they found out that that's exactly what was going on. And it had been there for so long. And it was so, I mean, the darkest side of it is, I have a friend who's a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And she sat in on some of the meetings when they were talking about what they were going to do for me. And, you know, the doctor originally, they came to me and they said, we want to do an operation. We want to cut out the infection in your heart. We're going to do this, blah, blah, blah. And the next day they came back and they said, listen, we've talked some more. We're not going to do that. And I was like, just make up your mind.
Yeah.
And they came back the next day. They're like, okay, we are going to do it.
Yeah.
And she told me, my friend who's a doctor, she said, Jonesy, they didn't think you'd survive. They didn't think you'd survive the operation. So they were reluctant to do it at all. But then they realized they didn't have any other choice.
Yeah.
So they had to do it.
Yeah.
And they did it. And I mean, that's the thing that makes me kind of fearless now.
Yeah.
Is I'm like, what else is there to be afraid of? Like, I really shouldn't be here. Like, I shouldn't have gotten sick and it shouldn't have progressed as far as it did. And I probably shouldn't have survived this operation.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't fucking care if I'm on this airplane. Like, who cares? Like, I'm not shitting, you know, over everything anymore. I feel like all of this now is borrowed time.
Yeah. You know? And before this happened, did you fret about a lot of things? Were you kind of an anxious guy?
Yeah, could not be a bigger neurotic, you know, nut. Like, I love therapy. You know, I'm from New York. Like, I've been going for years and years. And Canada, especially the West Coast of Canada, is less introspective.
Uh-huh.
It's in some ways childish. Like, you know, Vancouver's a very young city. I don't know if you guys have been there.
No,
but,
I haven't.
It's gorgeous. Rains all the time. But it really only became a city in the 80s. There was like an expo or something. And that was like when it kind of rose to a higher level. And it's not a therapy kind of city. It's not like New York.
What
you know?
City? Can you, is it analogous to any like U.S. city? What's the closest?
I don't know. Like some, like there, everybody, no one wants to sit down and have a coffee in Vancouver. They want to go for a walk and have a coffee. Everybody's got to keep moving. It's like a great city if you like reading, though. And it's a great city if you just want to, but you can't find a fucking therapist there.
Weird.
Toronto is much better because it borrows so much from New York, right?
Oh, yeah.
So no one's embarrassed by being nuts.
Yeah,
but, you know, I've always been nuts. I've always been worried about everything. And I've, you know, just like wringing my hands, just wondering if I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm back in therapy again now. Like, I feel like, I don't know. I why not try to get all my shit finally sorted out?
Yeah,
and it might never get sorted out.
Like, I mean, I think it never. And maybe you pick up more shit. It's like how you can never fully clean your closet. Because you always are just like, ooh, that's fun. I'll buy that.
That's right.
So then what? Because so you were telling us that you are like just the biggest hypochondriac ever.
Yeah.
So can do you have any examples?
Like some of it, like I'm the oldest child in my family. I grew up in upstate New York, like in the woods.
We
had a wood burning fireplace, like a little town called Camden, New York. It's a farm town. Like we lived in the snow belt. So right across the center of New York State is just a strip where all the lake effect snow from the Great Lakes blows across.
Yeah, yeah.
So our schools were fucking closed all the time. Like we hardly ever went to school in the winter. And I just was very sickly as a child. I have a brother who's a year younger than I am. And he's so good looking and he's so smart. And I just fucking hate him. And he never got sick. Like, I don't think he had a cavity until he was in his 40s. And me, I had like a million cavities. I had allergies. I had, you know, I was always my mom. You know, I spent most of my childhood, my mom driving me to the doctor, like to get allergy shots and just get everything looked at. And nothing seemed to work right with me and everything, like everything was wrong. And then when I was in college, I'm telling you all my stories tonight. I'm so excited. I just want to get this out. I want everyone to know. And I had a testicular tumor.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, when I was in college, I started just getting uncomfortable in the groin area.
Yeah.
I hope I can say that on the show.
You can say the groin area on this show for sure.
And so I went to the doctor, and this Chinese doctor, and he's like, we got to get that out of there. You have a tumor. And so...
You were in college?
Yeah, when I was in college.
That's
so
crazy.
I was just kind of, you know, like still trying to get on my feet with my, you know, sexualness
as
a man. And then all of a sudden, you know, you got three parts down there and I lost one. You know, they took it away.
Oh.
Is that the same thing as testicular cancer?
Well, I didn't have cancer. I had a tumor.
Oh.
And so back then, and this was a while ago. This was probably in the early 90s. They took out the tumor and they would send it off for testing.
Uh-huh.
And the doctor was like, look, this looks like cancer.
Yeah.
Almost assuredly, but we're sending it out for testing. And back then you had to wait a week. And so I was healing and I still have, I'm sorry, I'm so gross. I have scars in my abdomen where they pulled it out. And they put a fake one in there, but it's so small. let me pick it out, right?
Put a fake one in?
Yeah, they put a little piece of silicone in there. And I don't think
they... For fun?
No. Just because just to make me normal again.
So I never would have... I mean, it makes perfect sense, but I never would have thought to do that.
It's so small. It just... I'm like, why didn't... Just give me a bigger one. Like,
you could probably arrange for that to happen now.
I would like the size of an avocado. You know? And instead, it's just like a little undersized Super Bowl. And so they sent it out. And my mom, you know, I remember her like just staying home with me all week while I was recovering. And she was just crying in her house coat. I'm like, how is that fucking helping? You know, and then we got a call at the end of the week. And they're like, it's not cancer. And I'm like, well, can I have my old ball back?
Can you send it back?
I don't want this tiny little... undersized Super Bowl. Like, give me my regular testicle back.
So you have one testicle remaining that's yours.
Yeah.
And then the fake one, or what's the right word?
The prosthetic.
Prosthetic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, all my shit has just kind of always gone wrong. Like, you know, and then, like, I've just always had health problems. And, like, my brother still has two probably huge balls. And he's loving his life, you know? He's got no cavities and huge balls.
All good teeth, two balls.
Yeah,
he's a real hero.
Got no problems. And meanwhile, I got one ball and, you know.
How are your teeth?
My teeth are good.
Oh, good. Yeah, I mean, they look terrific. Look good.
Yeah.
So it sounds so far like you're not so much a hypochondriac as you are a sickly person.
Well, sickly, but also, like, I played football. Like, I played football for 15 years. I mean, I destroyed my knees. Yeah. It's all regrettable now. But I'm super healthy. Like, I'm super strong. I mean, not as strong as I used to be before all this, but I make a good impression.
Yeah.
Like, I'm here, you know? And so... It's just kind of like I look this way and I'm strong, but I'm inside. I still just feel sick and small. And I feel like I've had so many weird health problems. And I have one more I want to tell you about, but maybe I'll put a pin in it because the testicle one was a lot.
It's exactly what we show up for.
I have a question. You talk in your TED Talk about you have this robotic valve in your heart,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And you said in the TED Talk that it's going to last for a certain amount of time.
30 years.
So what happens in 30 years?
Well, they can replace it, but okay. You know what? I'm going to be almost 80. Like, and that is not an easy operation, right? Mm-hmm. To go in and pull out an old piece of plastic and put in a new one.
Yeah.
I don't know what my chance. The first challenge is I have to live that long. I have to get to 80, and this one has to kind of it'll start to fade. It'll just kind of run out of gas over time. Uh-huh. And it's a weird thing because my girlfriend, who I love so much, she sometimes will listen to my heart, and she says it sounds like a clock. And I'm like, that is perfect because it is kind of ticking down. And that's really I've been doing public speaking now, and that's what I'm doing out here in LA this week. I gave a talk this week, and it's a variation on my bucket list stuff.
Yeah.
And so I really hate bucket lists.
Yeah.
I hate them. I just hate, I'm going to skydive into the pyramids in my underwear. Yeah. And how is that useful? You know, everybody always wants to do things that look good on their Facebook feed, and that's
sure.
And I'm just let's get rid of some things, right? Let's trim our lives down. Like, why do we fold laundry?
Yeah,
you know, our lives are short.
Yeah,
you know, and we don't know how long were you guys are all look healthy in this room, but we don't know how much time.
No,
we have.
You just don't know.
You don't know. Right.
You don't know.
But it's kind of a relief though to not have to worry about it. It's kind of a relief to not just be obsessed with, oh my God, I hope I don't die. Like, I feel like I had a foot on the other side.
Yeah.
I really do. And when I came out of that operation and I started getting better, I feel like, oh man, I don't have any fear anymore. That's, I'm not afraid of the shit.
So do you find, would you even describe yourself as neurotic now or not any,
I don't know. The problems I've always had, I'm not good in relationships. That's still a problem. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to be a good partner for my girlfriend, Sarah, and I love her so much, but I still have to learn, and I'm just I don't know. I'm almost 50. And I almost died, probably a couple times at this point.
Yeah.
And I still have more to learn.
Yeah.
And part of me feels, I'm kind of torn because part of me wants to learn, and being alive makes I think that's a sign of being alive, is that you want to learn more. But also part of me is just fuck it. Who cares? Maybe I'm just not good at some things.
Yeah, a little more self-acceptance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is what I am. I have one ball and, I'm not that good in relationships. So I don't know how much more you want from me,
No, I feel like I've been, this is not at all comparable, but I feel like the state of the world recently, it's made things a little more I felt more immediately scared in my own life, a little more than normal, and in a way it's being a little scared has made me a lot less anxious because it's made me it's given me a tiny sense of awareness that any day could be
anything.
Your last, so so you've got to just work on kind of loving what you got today.
I love it. Yeah. I think that's a good perspective to have. And I was in New York on 9/11. I was.
Oh, jeez.
I know. Oh, were you guys?
Yeah, because you're from. Are you from? Well, Ben's from the city. He grew up in
Yeah,
New
I was
York
like
city.
On 23rd Street on 9/11. Madeline was off in New Jersey.
I was in New Jersey. So I wasn't really in the city. But,
New Jersey. Yeah. Jesus.
Yeah.
I was on 28th Street. 28th
oh, really?
And Park Avenue South.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so we were close to each other on that day. Yeah. Were you in your house when it was happening?
I was at work. I used to, that's another story, but I used to be a pornographer.
What? Wait, what kind? You were in it or you filmed
no,
it?
I can't. I have one ball.
But maybe that's a kink.
I guess that's true.
You answered an ad. They were like,
very
need
exotic.
Some one ball porn. Yeah.
So what kind of pornographer were you?
I used to write a girl copy for a magazine called Gallery.
Oh, cool pun.
Yeah, it was
called
Gallery. You're too young. You don't know Gallery.
No.
You probably don't even remember when they had print pornography magazines.
No, I do remember that.
Your dad used to hide it between the mattress and the box spring.
My dad didn't hide it. My parents kept all of our – we were the house that had Playboys that were just on display.
Wow.
And because my parents were
– sex positive?
Just intellectuals. They were like New York intellectuals, so it wasn't a big deal.
Wow.
Since Playboy actually does have good articles.
Yeah. I think
Playboy really
they truly
that's true.
Meant that they had it for the articles. When parents of my friends would complain about them being like out in the open.
So what did did you do on 9/11?
I was just at school, and I used to go to the United Nations school. That's where I went growing up. So it was evacuated because it was like kind of a target.
Of course, yeah.
Because it would be a great way to hurt a bunch of diplomats' kids in the same moment.
And how old were you?
I was 13.
Wow.
Yeah. Or no, maybe older, 14.
Probably, yeah.
2000. I was about to turn 15.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's too much. So cute. I love this guy. I was at Rocky Sullivan's on Lexington.
And so what was your experience of the day?
I went to work and I was walking. I had to cross Fifth Avenue because I would take the subway down, get off on the west side, and then walk east. And I was crossing Fifth Avenue and I looked down. God, this is such a dark podcast. Now I looked down and there's one of the fucking buildings and it's got smoke coming out of it. I'm like, oh, they must be having a fire. I mean, it happens sometimes. And I having no idea probably like 8:45, right? And one of the planes had hit at that point. And I went to work and then everybody, like, there was just this kind of, it's what you were just talking about. There was this kind of fear.
Yeah.
Like you could just suddenly, you felt mortal.
Yeah.
And, they were showing like this live news footage of people who were stuck up on the top of the building and they were just jumping off. And I had been down there the day before. I had a business down around Wall Street and I went down, I had to pick up some papers and left. And then like it was hard to imagine, it was hard to reconcile what I was watching with what I knew about Wall Street. Like I was like, how is that happening?
Yeah.
Like, you know, 80 blocks from here. How is that happening? And you think like a lot of people just those poor fuckers, they just got up in the morning and they went to work. And if the ones that got killed were the ones who got to work early.
Yeah.
You know? And like somebody who's just fucking dragging their ass and they're still alive.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about that on the anniversary this year, that was sort of like the day that my brain broke in a way.
Yeah.
Because there's something really weird about 3,000 people all dying at once so close to where you are. And I think that it's still like too hard to wrap your brain around.
That's right. But, you know, the thing is, it's like we live in a country that is relatively safe.
Yes.
And that gives us a weird psychological cushion.
Yes.
Between us and reality. And so that was a day when that cushion went away.
Yeah.
And suddenly we're like, holy shit. So now we're really all just fucking vulnerable.
Yeah.
Like there's just no barrier between us and the beyond.
Yeah.
And I think everybody who was there, like, I think it really changed New York. I mean, part of the reason why I left New York was, like, it just was stressful to live there after that.
Really?
Yeah, I just...
What was it? Yeah, how did it change? Because, again, both of us... I was, like, 16 during 9/11 also.
Oh,
so, like,
fuck
I feel
guys.
Like we have, like, different perceptions of, like, of how that changed our lives.
The subway was tough. We were, like, in school.
Yeah.
The subway was tough. I just always thought, like, I don't know if I'm going to get out of here. Somebody's going to try to blow this up. It makes so much sense to blow this up. Every time I'd go through the Lincoln Tunnel, my girlfriend lived in New Jersey. She lived in Hoboken.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I don't know. Every time I go through the fucking Lincoln Tunnel, I'm just like, I'm never coming out of this tunnel. And you'd go down, you'd get to the lowest part, and then you'd start coming out again. And you'd just be like thanking your lucky stars when you made it to the other side.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I've been feeling recently about North Korea.
Yeah.
Like I'm sort of like every morning I'm like, was there a nuclear attack yet?
Eggshells, man. Yeah.
And it scares me so much.
Yeah. I remember, one time we were going to Palm Springs and you were like, do you feel safer that we're going to Palm Springs in case we get nuked this weekend? I was like, I didn't really think of that before. Now I don't feel safer.
I feel safer in Canada for sure because nobody has any animosity for Canada. We never hurt anybody really.
Do you think you'll stay in Canada?
Yeah, I don't know. No, I'm trying to get my citizenship and I've been there long enough. Yeah. And so I just have to do all the paperwork and stuff. But I don't know if I mean, not to turn this into a big political thing, but I don't know if I want to come back to the U.S. anymore.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, there's just like a lot of weird, bad shit down here. You know, and everybody seems a little unhappy. And I know the economy is fine right now, but I don't know. I feel like there's going to be some bad shit at some point. And it's going to come out in some way that we can't even imagine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, Yeah, I don't know. I just in Canada, I think I sleep a little better.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it's, you know, the, you know, socialized healthcare, for sure. I need that now.
Yeah,
like,
oh, yeah.
Especially with all the stuff that's happened with healthcare, with Obama going out of office and everything. I need coverage, man. I need it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. Like, you must feel that much more acutely than
your
average person. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because even if, because if you were to move here, because you're essentially a free or a contractor at this point, right? A freelancer? Like, how would you describe, like?
Yeah, a contractor. Yeah. I mean, I do work for a series of different companies, and I'm always looking for new work.
Yeah.
And so I'm just always, you know, I always take meetings. Yeah. I'm taking meetings in LA, and I'm just like, I could do this, and this, and this is how much I cost. And,
But like live in the U.S. as a freelancer is so scary from a healthcare standpoint.
Yes. Yeah. And I did that for years, though.
Yeah.
I did that. And when I was living in Queens, I did that. And so I would always just buy my, you know, I don't know what it used to be, the Freelancers Union or whatever.
Yeah.
I used to belong to that. And the health insurance wasn't bad.
Yeah.
But we're talking about almost 15 years ago now.
Yeah.
Know? So some time has passed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's been, what, 4 years since your near-death experience? Is that true?
2013. I had open heart surgery in 2014.
Okay. So like three-ish years.
Yeah. So I got about 27 years left.
Oh, that sucks.
30 years this thing lasts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you could get it replaced.
Yeah.
Yeah. 27 years left on this model of your heart valve. I watched your TED Talk, and I know that like you've embraced this sort of kind of... Well, do you want to sum up for our listeners kind of your fuck it list philosophy in case they haven't seen the TED Talk?
Yeah. I mean, we were talking about this a little bit before, but it's just like everybody thinks, oh, I got to get a bucket list. And people were telling me that I needed a bucket list after what I had been through.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just like, none of it felt true to me.
Sure,
you know, like I'm a weird guy. I don't know what I'm going to learn about myself or learn about the world if I jump out of an airplane. Like, I don't give a shit, you know? And I always just kind of hate that, like, you know, that was on my bucket list and I crossed. Like, I just hate the term. And so I sat down to try to write one day. And I just started making a list of all the things I didn't want to do anymore.
Yeah.
All the things that I wanted to let go of. And I think all of us, we overbook ourselves.
Yeah.
We say yes to too many things and we think we're too many things. And, you know, it's just like, I don't know, simplify your life.
Yeah.
Pare it down to its essence and... like, just enjoy those things and don't, you know, don't make a list of a bunch of melodramatic things that are going to look great on social media. Like, who cares? Like, just, you know, one of the things on the list is gift buying, right? I'm not buying gifts anymore for weddings. I'm not buying wedding gifts for people because everybody I know, everybody is fucking divorced now. And I don't get the spice racks back.
Yeah.
And I don't get the Hamilton Beach blender back. Like, it's just gone. Like, they just sell it or throw it away. I don't know what the fuck they do.
And people don't really notice wedding gifts, really, because you're getting so many at one time.
That's right.
That, like, it's like a little bit of a,
But it's gift giving in general. It's just like, I hate when I feel like I have to, like, her birthday's coming up. I really got to get her something. It's like, I do that. Then I force myself to go somewhere and force myself to buy something. And then I give it to them. They might not, probably won't like it. And then they got to do the same fucking thing for me in reverse. Like, why do we do this?
Yeah.
Like, stop.
So, like, letting go of, like, the rituals that we feel like we couldn't possibly break.
That's
and realizing that, like, you can. It's not that hard.
That's right.
So then so I feel like you've made a lot of these kind of micro changes in your life.
Yeah.
Can you chart any sort of major changes that have happened as a result of embracing a fuck it list? Like, what does your life look like in 2017 as opposed to your life in 2014?
I think I'm a work in progress. Like,
yeah.
I'm like trying to rebuild myself.
Yeah.
And I don't know how successful that project is going to be. I hope it turns out okay. Yeah. But I don't know. So, like, I'm not a finished product.
Yeah.
I used to be a TV host for a long time. I was a writer and a producer, very comfortable in front of the camera. But I don't do that anymore. And now I'm like, who the fuck am I? Like,
and why don't you do that anymore? Is it because – or why don't you do that anymore specifically?
Well, I media's gone away. Like every – you know, I'm a writer, you know, by nature. And so I, for years, just made money writing.
Yeah.
I just – and you used to be able to make a lot of money writing.
Yeah.
And then in New York, I started doing TV. I was the morning video game guy on Fox 5 and on CW11.
Oh, cool.
Like all, CNN. Yeah. I did all of it. And then I got involved with this guy in Canada who had a show, and he asked me if I wanted to move there. And it just kind of worked out that way. But it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't. Yeah. You can't. I don't know. You just, and I could try to hold on to it, and I could try to build a social media following, but I'm kind of okay letting it go too. You know?
Do you feel like you would have been okay letting it go had you not had that near death experience?
Yeah, I think I was getting ready, and I think like everybody I know, all the most successful writers, everybody, you know, even if you've been working at a newspaper for 20 years, everyone's getting buyouts, and everybody everybody is done.
Yeah,
it is over, man. Yeah. Like if you want to read something about a video game or the new iPhone or whatever, just look at social media.
Right,
that's
right.
Where you'll get everything you need.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't exist. And part of me just doesn't, I don't want to force myself to keep being on TV, you know?
Right, like,
I'm getting older, and I got really sick a couple years ago. And, you know, like, you know, not to turn this into a pity party, but like my hair is falling out, and I just kind of want to let myself go.
You got a ton of hair, it seems like.
I know.
You've got a lovely head of hair.
Believe me, I know the difference, and when the difference is happening,
I'm sure, yes.
It's different.
I'm sure it's the kind
of
thing you notice if it's your hair, but I just want to go on the record saying you do not seem like a man who's losing his hair.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
But again, I trust you guys, and I'm telling you these things. It's happening. And I don't want to have to be going to, like, you know, one of these hair clinics and getting the thing and they pull this out and put a new one on or whatever the fuck they do. I just want to look at some hats and I want to go to bed early.
Like,
who cares? Like, I don't care.
Right.
Like,
why am I
pushing myself? And I don't want to, I don't know. Like, I want to leave the vanity behind.
Yeah.
And I just want to be more me, more real. And I don't want to worry about keeping my hair.
Yeah. No, I completely understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah. To basically embrace the life changes that happen to everyone.
I mean, it fucking kills me.
Yeah.
I don't want to lose it, but I'm losing it. Like, it's just life. And it's just, I hate to use this language, but I'm trying to lean into it. You know, I'm trying to go where I'm going. And, trying to be there as much as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you a spiritual person?
I hate religion. I really do. I just hate it, and I feel like religion fucked me up so badly. And excuse me.
Did you grow up religious?
Catholic. Yeah, we went to church all the time. The Catholic religion is just horrible, and I just felt guilty of masturbating and everything. Like, I just grew up with so much shame and guilt, and then I lost my ball, and I blame it on. On religion, because I felt so horribly guilty about what was happening in my pants. And
yeah, that's cruel.
You know, I have a friend who actually used to work at Playboy, and he's got a couple of kids, and he's got two boys, and he's just like, you know, enjoy your bodies. Like, what a revelation that would be, you know? And I'm just like, I really struggled. I really, really, really struggled, and I just felt gross, and I feel like I'm still trying to shake it off.
Yeah.
So I don't think I've become, if anything, less spiritual. I don't want anything to, like, maybe I meditate, but I don't really go to organized religion. Yeah. I don't engage in that.
So what is meditating about for you?
It's, you know, again, it's just kind of trying to calm down the voices in my head, my neuroses, and just be myself more, I guess, and I don't know, just slow myself down a little.
Yeah.
Do you guys meditate? Who's a meditator? Doesn't sound like it.
I don't meditate, but I do. I sort of have like a journaling ritual in the morning, that is very much about slowing myself down. Like, you know, it's like, not if you were to read it back, it wouldn't be like interesting or good, because it's almost the same thing every day. It's like a little bit of like, almost like a mantra of like what I like intend and hope for in that day, and just taking like that kind of quiet beat in the morning like makes all of the difference. Because I also have to make a big effort to slow myself down, because I'll just like spin myself into a frenzy and just like be doing too many things at once and thinking too many things at once. And I like, and that's just one of like one of the tools that I've developed to like, you know, to at least get things started on the right track.
Our days are so busy, and I think if you just take a minute and write a few things down, can make a, a big difference in your day. Do you journal, sir?
Oh, I pray for like 20 minutes a day to like a very general secular God that I believe in. And I feel like even if I'm just talking to myself, it ends up making me feel better.
That's good.
I'm like fine if God doesn't exist.
Yeah.
I tend to believe that he does, but that ends up being helpful for me.
Why no journaling for you?
Oh, I journal like just what happened in the day.
Yeah, you more keep a proper journal. I sort of write like a sort of meditative prayer.
Want an accounting.
Yeah. Why do we call it journaling? It makes us sound like teenagers.
Yeah, what would you call it?
Just writing.
Just writing.
You do a little writing in the morning.
Yeah, that's true.
Is that more mature?
Well, I don't like anything that sneaks towards the term morning pages, which I really bristle at.
Who says morning pages?
It's like an artist. It's like a self help thing. Like there's this book, The Artist's Way, that people were reading for a long time, and for a while everybody was like doing their morning pages, which I think was helpful to them, but I have a negative association.
I hate that.
Yeah.
Morning pages.
Yeah, morning pages is exactly what I do, but I just don't call it that.
Yeah, and I do the same thing. I don't call it. I would never call it morning pages. I will be haunted by that phrase probably for the rest of my life.
Is there anything you do want to do before you die? So I know you don't want to like do a like wild social media, look at me, I'm so cool.
No,
but
that's
like,
right.
Do you have any actual hopes that you would hope you could accomplish before your time is up on this?
You know, when I was in the hospital, I just felt like I wanted two things. One is I wanted to be in love. Like I just wanted to, and I felt like all my life I've been in these fucked up relationships, and I just felt like I just want to be myself 100% with somebody, and I want to trust that person and have someone who leans on me and someone who I can lean on, and we can do our morning pages together. and so that's all I kind of – if I don't think I prayed, but I feel like I felt like I'm tired of holding on to the side of the pool. You know, when you're learning how to swim, I'm like, I want to go out in the middle.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted that.
Yeah.
And I also, the other thing, and I've been trying to do it for years. Mm-hmm. I took that pornography job in New York because I thought, holy shit, I will get such a great story out of this.
Oh.
And so I went to a writing workshop in New York, and I probably have 800 pages of a novel. And I just thought, this is all I want to do. I don't know how much time I have left. That's all I'm working on now.
Your novel.
Yeah, I just want to write this fucking novel because I have great material. Like I saved the letters we would get every day at the magazine were amazing.
Yeah.
I have a million letters that are great. And I'm like, wow, what am I going to do with these? What if I did this? What if I did this? And so I just want to turn that into a real project and make it a real thing, even if it is ultimately unpublishable.
Yeah, just to finish.
I just want to finish it and get it out of my system and then I'm ready to go. So, you know, like that is my only big major goal. So if I did have one thing on the bucket list, and I think that's the only kind of bucket list entry you can have is when you're getting that kind of soul satisfaction and you're not, you know, there was a guy recently in Australia who jumped out of an airplane naked, nothing but his parachute on, and on the way down he's playing a violin. I'm like, what the fuck are you, why are you doing this? Like, why do we do this shit? Seriously, why? But I want to write this novel, and again, I don't know. I just really want to do it.
Yeah.
I just want to do it. And that's the only thing that really means anything to me.
Does it really not make a difference to you whether it becomes like a legacy or not?
I don't care. Like, honestly, like Herman Melville died before he knew what. I don't even know if Moby Dick was published when he died. I think he just wrote it and he was miserably depressed and he died. And then like we're still reading it hundreds of years later. It's like, you don't know. Like, I don't know if you're going to get what you're supposed to get. And all I know is that I have a great story.
Yeah.
It's a guy moving to New York and, you know, takes a weird job and he goes down a very strange path. And suddenly he's at photo shoots and he's like going to weird, like having lunch with porn stars. I'm just like, I got to make this into a novel. Like, this is a great story. I got to tell this.
And it exactly is like, there's nothing like glamorous or cool that you could take a picture of, like, to be like, hey, working on my novel, you know, so it's like it is that I feel like we talk about that a lot, like just the two of us, like sort of making the hard and less glamorous choice of like trying to do exactly what you want as opposed to doing something that sort of like pops and is cool and tells easily.
Right.
Like that feels like a very important distinction.
What's going on in your therapy these days?
You know, do you know I'm not in therapy?
Holy shit.
Isn't that bad?
Ben, we got to get her to therapy.
I know he's been trying forever. I'm and I I just can't follow through and do. I mean, this is like a thing I need to talk about in therapy, but I can't. I have excellent follow through when it comes to work and doing things for other people, but like not when it comes to like anything that's about taking care of myself. Yeah. So it's truly, I have like found therapists for so many people. Like I know how to do it. I know the right questions to ask. I know all the sites, and I just like won't set aside like an hour and a half to like get the ball rolling myself.
Okay. There's a block.
Yeah. There's a serious block. Yeah.
You might learn a lot about Madeline if you look at her car, because like her car is her only space that's just her space, and it's horrible and horrifying inside there. So it like looks like somebody who has a serious problem. Our apartment, because it's a shared space, she's the main one who keeps it like really nice and spiffy and looking clean and adult. But her like anything that's just on her, she could live like somebody who's.
So what's the most horrible thing in your car?
Well, right now, I have a full bag of chips and salsa that's been there for like about a month. Just some old chips and salsa. Once I had a banana peel in there so long that I couldn't. The only thing that made me take it out was there were so many flies in my car. It was obstructing my vision. I couldn't drive.
Oh, my God.
There's the barbecue stain.
Oh, there's barbecue sauce on the wall and ceiling, and it won't come off.
Okay.
I mean,
but
I
haven't even tried.
No,
you
never haven't tried, really so tried. Maybe it won't come off. Won't come off maybe an editorialized.
So much hair.
A lot of hair. Because I got a lot. Like, you know, it's always, like, I'm. Maybe not losing. I'm constantly shedding.
Yeah,
it's
full
of hair.
Yeah.
It's like a lot. I mean, just crumbs on crumbs, a bunch of like somebody. People keep coming in my car and thinking they're doing me a nice favor by like putting all the bottles and wrappers like in a bag and taking it out. But it just is. It's like that again within a day. And I don't have the heart to tell
you
people.
Know, remember that show with Joe Rogan, Fear Factor, was
the
one? And that they could put some of the contestants on Fear Factor in your car for two minutes.
They wouldn't have made it.
And they'd come out covered with barbecue sauce and hair. And they're like, oh my God.
I can visibly see people's opinion of me changing when they've ridden in my car for the first time. See it in their eyes. They're like, oh, I didn't realize there's something wrong with you. Well, do you want to play a really fast game?
What do you want to play?
Okay. Well, it's a little game. and it's called Bucket or Fuck It.
Okay.
Mundane edition.
Okay.
Okay. So here's the deal. It's your last day on Earth, but you've already done all the like important stuff. Like you've like talked to all your loved ones. You've like, you know, you've done all of that stuff that like you sort of would like have to do before you die. And now you just have like 12 hours of like the most normal day where you can't do any of that stuff. And I'm going to give you a couple. This is sort of like a would you rather situation. I'm going to give you a couple choices and you need to choose which one you would choose for your last day on Earth. So, for example, the first one is, would you have Cheez-Its or some fancy cheese? You can only have one. It's your last 12 hours on Earth. Which would you eat, Cheez-Its or would you eat some fancy cheese?
Absolutely fancy cheese.
Fancy cheese.
Fancy cheese?
Yeah, fuck Cheez-Its, man.
So, Madeline, it's Cheez-Its for you?
Oh, through and through. I honestly thought that would be a softball question for Cheez-Its.
God, Cheez-Its are horrible.
No, are you kidding?
There's no taste.
There's so much taste. They pack such a great real cheddar taste.
It's like eating salted cardboard. Like why would you eat those things?
Because they're delicious. It's like eating a cheese and crackers
You're keeping the Cheez-Its people in business.
I really might be. I love them so much.
Oh yeah.
I love
Cheez-Its. She loves Cheez-Its.
I love all the flavors. I love the Tabasco flavored. Sometimes you'll get a regular bag, but it smells like a Tabasco bag. And that's like such a fun little like Cheez-Its Easter egg.
Yeah.
It's a great question because normally I would take Cheez-Its over the fancy cheese because fancy cheese gives me diarrhea. But on my last day on Earth, I'm going to have fancy cheese.
But do you think that you might spend 45 minutes of your last day on Earth shitting?
Maybe, but I'll take it for my last day.
Well, great.
That's always the embarrassing thing about dying. It's just you always push out a turd at the end.
Do you really?
You always do?
You almost, like, my brother said he had to put his dog down a few years ago, and they took him into the vet, and they put the dog under, and he was gone. And then he just kind of pushed out a slow one at the end.
was a little farewell.
I just I could just really relax. Slow one right out the back door.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
But I think it's just like these like sacred sort of rich. It's like, well, you come into the earth with a bunch of, with pretty much a big turd too. I mean, like birth is like full of shit.
Oh yeah, everyone
shits
everywhere.
So, you know, that the real circle of life is
it's shit. It really is.
Okay.
Sorry for that digression.
Please don't be sorry. It's a very fun fact. Beer or wine?
Beer, for sure.
Yeah, beer. Well, how fancy is the wine?
Oh, I don't know. A good one of both.
Oh, a good one of both.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like shitty beer or nice wine.
Okay, I'll do fine wine.
So sophisticated.
Yeah.
What about you?
You know, I wrote this question, I guess wine. I don't really like beer or wine. Yeah. I realized I should have said beer / wine or soda, so I could have chose soda, because I love soda.
Okay.
I just love soda.
What soda? You like Coke?
I like Diet Dr. Pepper.
And Diet Coke.
But Diet Dr. Pepper is my fave.
You're keeping the Cheez-Its people in business and the Coke people in business.
It's man, one of my favorite snacks in college was, do you remember Combos?
Yeah, of course.
I would get Combos and a big old orange soda. And
that's
I would
your ultimate.
Go to town. Okay. Would you, can either, on your last day on Earth, you can have a fun long text chain with your four funniest friends, or you can have a 30-minute phone call with your oldest friend. Phone. Maybe not your favorite friend, your oldest friend.
Phone call.
Yeah, me too.
Who would your oldest friend be?
Oh, I guess.
Think of who that person would be.
Franz Mernick, I guess. That would be really nice. We could have a nice final 30-minute conversation.
Franz Mernick?
Yeah, with Franz, with a little Franzy. Who would you call?
Fuck, man. I don't know. I don't know. Off the top of my head. I'm sorry. I'm drawing a blank right now.
No. Well, because I might actually pick the texting, and I hate texting. I'm not into it at all, but thinking about my oldest friend, I think it's probably somebody who I haven't spoken to in decades. So I think it might be fun to just text some people who I know now.
Oh, I know my friend Jason in Vancouver. He's a sweet guy. I would talk to him.
He's your oldest friend?
Yeah, he's probably my oldest one. Like, it's so funny. When you go through life, you sort of get new cycles of friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, especially if you've lived in different places. Like you guys here on the West Coast, a different group of friends.
Yeah.
But if you move to another place, you'd have another group of friends. And so Jason was my Vancouver friend. Mm. That's all.
I guess I was taking it too literally. I was thinking I would have to. Oh, you know what? I think I was mistaking oldest friend with first friend.
Well, are you saying oldest friend, like the age wise?
No,
or
he's just like.
But he's like the oldest person who you're still friends with.
Okay. Well, he's just the guy I made friends with in Vancouver, and I was in the hospital, and he came almost every day before he'd go to work, and it was just a sweet guy. Like, he's just a nice Jewish man. Another nice Jew.
Yeah, I think I would also pick oldest friend then, because I would rather have a phone call with someone I'm. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't.
Anyway. Going swimming or taking a nice long shower?
I'm glad you said shower. I thought you were going to say something else.
Going swimming. Sounds really nice for the last day.
I don't know. I think I might take the shower.
Man, I'm really torn. Because I would love to go swimming and take a long shower.
You're stumping yourself.
I really am. Why? Now, why?
I don't know. The showers, if there's soap, like you're rubbing yourself and it's nice and I'm not religious anymore. And so I could, you know, just give me, I could enjoy myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
it could be.
You're
like,
stumping
I don't
yourself
know.
In the shower.
Yeah. I feel like that's the way I would go.
Okay. And then last but not least.
All right.
Going for a long walk or eating a huge burger. And if you don't like burgers or don't eat meat, just replace it with something you like.
I would eat ice cream, I think.
Okay, so you'd rather eat a bowl of ice cream than go on a long walk?
Yeah. What do I need to go for a walk for?
What about you?
Yeah, I'd most any food over the walk for the last day.
Well, you're in L.A. No one walks here.
But, well, you could be in a nice place if it's your last day.
I love walking.
Yeah.
But you'd rather sit down.
So on your last day, if you cannot go outside and walk around, you would trade the ability to go outside and walk around and, like, be in the world forgetting to eat a tasty burger?
It sounds to me like I'm either going to go on a walk and not get a burger
yeah.
or sit down at home and get a burger.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
I want a burger. Yeah.
Well, that's all. Those are the questions of that game. That would you rather, or bucket or fuck it, Mindy.
Really nice, Madeline.
Wow, nobody's ever clapped for a game before. That's really fun.
You deserve it.
Thank you. Scott, is there anything you want to plug?
Well, I have a podcast now. It's called Heavily Pixelated. And basically, this is how it works. You can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, all over the place. And I make them as often as I can. And I'm just a one-man band. So it's a show about I really wanted to create a show that reflects kind of the emotional maturity of gamers. No one ever talks about that.
Yeah.
So what I wanted to do is basically I want to talk to gamers who have been going through a tough time in their lives.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Like if they got fired or if they went through a divorce and what video game got them through that tough time. Because everybody I know who's a gamer who goes through a tough time, they're like, oh, man, Destiny got me through that. It was so tough. So it's kind of like their chance to have a moment of introspection. Yeah. And also to talk about video games and how video games can kind of help us get through, like, the video games are kind of like a bridge to the other side of a bad time in your life. And I think it also kind of celebrates how articulate a lot of gamers are. Like, gamers are in their 30s and 40s now and 50s, they've been through a lot, and games have helped them get through a lot.
You know?
So whenever anybody goes through a breakup or gets fired or anything, that's what the show's about. So I'm always looking for guests. If people, you know, I have my own website, scottcjones.com. You can also find me on Twitter, at Scott C. Jones. There's always a C in there.
Yeah, great.
Do people have to be in Canada to be on your show, or they can be anywhere?
No, I mean, this is North America. Like, I will go anywhere, talk to anybody.
That's great.
I can Skype people. I travel a lot. So when I come to L.A., usually I try to record one.
Cool,
I'm going to
do
one next week when I go up to Vancouver.
Oh, nice.
And one of the first shows I did was a friend of mine in Toronto who realized that he was a woman from playing a game called Mass Effect, where you can play as a man or as a woman.
Wow.
And so he played as a woman the whole time. And then shortly after that, decided he actually was a woman.
Wow.
And so the show really talks like it was a great kind of, you know, it was great. Like, it was such a great story. I just sort of stumbled into this person going through a really strange time in her life now. And I also learned a lot about gender and how part of me always felt judgmental about people who are going through these kinds of things. But then watching someone go through it so intimately this, I really learned a lot about this. So
that's fascinating.
Yeah. And so I'm just looking for great stories. Like, even if it's like, even if you just got fired from, you know, Wendy's and you just, you know, that's a great story too, but you know.
Well, you don't ever hear, I mean, or like, I don't know really anything about the gaming world, but you hear like Gamergate and like, you know, like gamers hate women and like, you just never hear really about like the positive
that's the
side
thing.
Of gaming, and that's pretty cool.
That's what I want to celebrate. Yeah. That's exactly right. Like, I want to talk, you know, I really want to treat games more respectfully than we normally do.
So if I like Myst, and that's the only thing I really like and have played, is there anything I should play that kind of has that same sort of sense of mystery? Like, I don't like a game where I can die. I'm not interested in dying or really doing a lot of killing.
I mean, there's so much now in the indie space. There's so much, and there's so much of it's great. Like, there are so many creative people out there that are building brilliant games that are that have really great tangible atmosphere. I don't know. I can send you a list.
Honestly, that would be great.
Cody, and he can pass them on to you.
That would be amazing, because I would love.
Are you sure you want that? I think you're just being nice.
No, I've gotten deeply into Myst, I'm going to beat it soon.
Why don't you get deeply into cleaning your fucking car?
Because I gotta have some fun in life.
You got barbecue on the ceiling. Yeah. You don't even try to wipe it off. Your hair everywhere.
That's Madeline's fuck it list thing.
Yeah, it is my fuck it list. It really is. Because honestly, who cares? I'm the only one who's got to drive in it. Like, I'll clean it if, like, you know, anybody who doesn't already know what a shit show it is going to ride in it. But, like, truly, like, It's like I feel I'm very regimented in certain areas of my life, and the ones that I feel don't need that level of attention, I'm very happy to just throw to the wind.
So that's your fuck it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, my car is my
what
fuck it.
What about you?
Oh, I don't think I have a lot of fuck it.
We'll
do
come
I?
Back to you.
Yeah. No, do you? Yeah, what is it?
You must have something.
Yeah. I feel like you have a lot, like.
Pumpkin spice lattes?
I've started to go. I used to not be able to disappoint anybody, any of my mm-hmm. friends. And I've started to go easier on myself with disappointing people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like so canceling on someone.
You've disappointed yeah. all of us tonight.
You're welcome. Thank you. So I'm pretty happy about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. Good for you. No, I think that's really great, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you got to make those leaps sometimes.
Yeah.
You're a healthier person giving yourself permission to disappoint some
yeah.
people.
Yeah. Because otherwise you're kind of manic and.
Yeah. Yeah. You're holding yourself to an incredibly ridiculous standard.
Yeah.
So why do that to yourself? Yeah. That's such a
I'm
good
done.
One.
Yeah, that's
I
a
love
great
it.
One.
I love it. Cleaning the car, not
cleaning the car, and not
disappointing people. What about you, Cody? You got anything?
Learning to say no to work.
Ooh. Oh,
yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where else do you work other than here?
I do a lot of freelance, like writing and directing.
Yeah.
And I do some freelance podcast producing. And I'm taking all of October off outside of like my actual 9 to 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Good for
that's
you.
Great.
Wow. You guys, there were three really good ones.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well. You guys, this was so fun. Thank you so much, Scott.
Anytime.
Thank you for coming
no,
here.
No, all the
seriously,
all the best in the future with the podcast. And I listen to you guys, and I love what you do, and I love that you go down the morbid road. And we went to dark areas tonight.
Yeah.
And I really I'm sure I'm gonna just regret that I talked about half the things I talked about. I'm gonna be in an Uber on the way home, and I'm just gonna be like, why did you talk about that? So, but thanks for listening. I think thank you.
Thank you for sharing. You have a bunch of awesome stories, and I'm excited to read that book one day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let us know when it comes out.
Yeah.
1 year.
Yeah.
Just
great.
Give me 1 year. I just got to go through the 800 pages that I've already written.
Yeah. Well, great.
This has been Definitely Dying. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes, and you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Definitely Dying.
Until next time, stay healthy.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.